And some of these senses are more detailed than others. But the primary purpose of the census is to know the number of inhabitants there are in a country. Numbers played an important role in the Bible as well. And some numbers carry more significance than others. The numbers 7, 10, and 12 are just a few examples. And of course, there is an entire book of the Bible based on numbers. So what does all this have to do with the subject that we'll look at today? We're going to look at an incident that could be considered one of the most egregious sins recorded in the Bible. This sin had far-reaching implications and even affected an entire nation. This particular incident involved David. Now, David got some really bad press, it seems. But in all fairness, he did bring a lot of that on himself with his actions. But today we'll look at the lessons we can learn from David's census of Israel. There are two accounts in the Bible of this particular incident. 2 Samuel 24 is one of the chapters, and 1 Chronicles 21 is the other. And there is some seemingly contradictory information between these two accounts. But as we go through them, we'll hopefully clear up those issues, those seemingly discrepancies. Of course, we realize that the Bible does not contradict itself, and the Bible interprets the Bible. And clearing up these issues will help to understand the incident more fully. As I mentioned, we must use the Bible to clarify itself and not rely solely on our own interpretations, because that could prove problematic. And for example, we can look at the context to clear up an issue, or we can look at several scriptures on the same subject. And oftentimes, doing just that alone will help to clarify a matter. The first question we might ask is this: why was it wrong for David to count Israel? In the book of Numbers, appropriately enough, God commanded a count be taken, and more than once at that. We can find the first example in Numbers chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. Numbers chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. Numbers chapter 1, verse 1, and the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of the congregation on the first day of the second month. In the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying, verse 2, take the sum of all the congregations of the sons of Israel, according to their families, by their father's house, with the number of names every male by their heads, from 20 years old and upward, all that are able to go forth to war in Israel. You and Aaron shall number them by their armies. So clearly God wanted a census to be done, a count be taken of Israel. The second time that a census was commanded in the book of Numbers is found in chapter 26, verse 4. Numbers chapter 26 and verse 4. And again, God says to count the people from 20 years old and upward, as the Lord commanded Moses and the sons of Israel who came out of the land of Egypt. So there are two times, twice here, that God had commanded a census be taken. So clearly there was already a precedent for a census to be taken of Israel. There were times when God commanded this be done. And therein lies the key. What then was the difference between these censuses of Israel and the one that David conducted? Well, let's find out. We'll start in 2 Samuel chapter 24, and the parallel account is in 1 Chronicles chapter 21. But let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 24, beginning in verse 1. 2 Samuel 24. It 2 Samuel 24, verse 1. And again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, "Go forth, Israel and Judah." So since the word "again" is used here, there were other times that God was angry. That's the implication, obviously. There were other times when God was angry with Israel. This is not the first time, although the reason for God's anger is not specifically stated here. So if you hold places here in 2 Samuel, we'll go back to 1 Chronicles 21, verse 1. So keep your places here, go to 1 Chronicles and verse 1. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 1. And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to take a census of Israel. So right away we see something that seems a little bit disconnected. 2 Samuel states that God moved Israel, or God moved David rather, to count Israel. Here in 1 Chronicles it states that Satan provoked David to take a census. Is this contradictory? What's the answer? Well, God allows Satan to act in our lives. He did with Job, for example. But he does this for his own purposes, God does. God allowed Satan to test David. And because David submitted or succumbed, God was angry with him. But there's more to it than that. There's an underlying reason for God's displeasure. Back in 2 Samuel 24, let's go back there, at verse 2, 2 Samuel 24, verse 2, David told Joab to count all the tribes of Israel. So David would know the number of the people. Joab, you might recall, played an important role earlier in David's life. He was part of David's inner circle. He was among David's closest and most trusted advisors. Earlier in 2 Samuel, David sent Joab into battle with the sons of Ammon. And Joab received a message from David via Uriah, no less, to have Uriah killed in the battle. That way David could justify his actions with Bathsheba, who happened to be Uriah's wife. This is one example of how Joab was a trusted advisor to David. But even Joab realized that there was something wrong with this picture. Notice verse 3 of 2 Samuel 24. And Joab said to the king, "And may the Lord your God add to the people however many they be, 100 times as many. And may the eyes of my lord the king see it. But why does my lord the king delight in this thing?" So Joab saw that something wasn't quite right about taking a census with Israel. Joab realized that numbers really didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. He realized that God could add as many people as he wanted to. And Joab questioned David's motives. He could see that David didn't really think this through. And there was an attitude problem as well. It was one that David did not recognize, but Joab did. Reading some background information in 2 Samuel 23 and 1 Chronicles 20, the two previous chapters, we can read about David's victories and Israel's exploits. They accomplished a lot. Perhaps that is why they lost sight of the ultimate power and glory, which was God. But could it be that because of their pride and trust in themselves, that God became angry with David and with Israel? They saw themselves as being larger than life, in a sense. They seemingly neglected to realize that it was God who gave them their victories. It wasn't what they had done, what they had accomplished themselves. It was through God. It's possible that David and, by extension, Israel, were becoming filled with pride about their accomplishments. Their egos were swelling, and they began to put more trust in themselves than in God. And that's a lesson for us today as well. We must put our reliance on God and in God to give us the victories, and not to take it on ourselves, not to take the credit for ourselves. And most importantly, we must realize that God is in charge. It's all too easy for us to take credit for the victories we have in life, rather than realizing that it was God who gives the victories. But nonetheless, David went ahead with the census against the advice of Joab. Joab, being a loyal servant, trusted advisor to the king, reluctantly went with the commanders of the army over Israel to count Israel. Notice verse 4. But the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the commanders of the army. And Joab and the commanders of the army went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. From what is written, Joab told David what was on his mind, but David still went ahead, ignored the advice of Joab. And it appears that it wasn't just Joab who objected to the census either. The commanders of the army could not persuade David either. But nevertheless, Joab, being an obedient servant, obeyed the king's command. We might wonder how Joab felt about that. On the one hand, he knew the census was wrong, but he also realized that God had put David in charge. The next two verses of 2 Samuel 24 show in detail how the census was conducted. And verse 8, it states that the census took 9 months and 20 days, just a few days shy of 10 months. Now, that was certainly enough time for David to reconsider his decision. And the count was completed. God could have, didn't. Instead, he gave David time to consider his options. But there could be more to David's senses. David might have been thinking that, especially in light of his recent victories, that another campaign, maybe he was planning another invasion or another war. There is an implication of that in verse 9. Two things to notice in 2 Samuel 24 and verse 9. And Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to the king. And there were in Israel 800,000 strong men who drew the sword. And the men of Judah were 500,000 men. So the first thing to notice is that the words there, that these were the men who drew the sword, implying that those are the ones who are ready for battle. Also notice the numbers, 800,000 from Israel and 500,000 from Judah. Let's keep our places here and go back to 1 Chronicles 21, verse 5. We'll go back to 2 Samuel shortly, but let's turn back to 1 Chronicles 21, verse 5. We're going back and forth between these two accounts throughout the message. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 5. And Joab gave the sum of the census of the people of Israel. Joab gave the sum of the census of the people to David. And in all Israel, there were 1,100,000 men who drew the sword. And in Judah, there were 470,000 men who drew swords. So notice the different numbers between the two accounts. Why was that? 2 Samuel states that there were 800,000 from Israel and 500,000 from Judah. 1.1 million from Israel and 470,000 from Judah. Well, there are a number of possible scenarios. It could be attributed to the difference in age as opposed to readiness for battle, or excluding those who are already in the army. Another difference that is noted, and who is not, Levi and Benjamin are excluded in 1 Chronicles 1, but not in 2 Samuel. So those numbers could affect Judah's totals. So while there is a difference in the numbers in these two accounts, there are explanations. So after all was said and done, David realized something. He realized that he had done wrong. Remember that it took almost 10 months to think about it. And after nearly 10 months, he came to that conclusion. Let's go back to 2 Samuel 24 in verse 10. 2 Samuel. And it struck him after he had numbered the people. And David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. And now I beseech you, O Lord, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly. David realized that he should not have conducted the census. He should have listened to Joab and to others. More importantly, he should have listened to God. How often does that happen to us? How often have we done something against the advice of others, only to realize that what we did was wrong after all? Joab saw that numbering Israel was wrong. In spite of that advice, David went ahead anyway. Only after the count was completed, after nearly 10 months, did David realize that he had done something wrong. Still, there were consequences. David pleaded with God to take away the iniquity of your servant, as we just read. David still had to face the consequences of his sin, however. And as it turned out, so did the entire nation. Although it might seem unfair to punish an entire nation because of one person's sins, let's remember that God was angry again with Israel. It wasn't the first time. We read that in verse 1. God dealt with David and with Israel at the same time. This is all part of God's divine purpose, and it was designed to bring humility to all those concerned. Remember that Israel had won a number of battles with their enemies and began once again to forget God and to rely on themselves. Pride was creeping in, and God was planning to replace that attitude with one of humility, to show the Israelites once again where they were wrong. Now imagine being in David's position at this point. You sinned against God, you realized your sin and asked forgiveness, which are all right and proper things to do, but there were still consequences. The consequences of your sin would be felt by an entire nation. Just imagine how David felt. Continue on in 2 Samuel 24, verses 11 to 12. And David rose up in the morning, and the word of the Lord came to the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, Go and say to David, So says the Lord, I offer you three things. Choose one of them, that I may do it to you. So Gad was to go into David and give him three options. David was to choose one of them. Verse 13, the options were given. And Gad came to David and told him and said to him, Shall 7 years of famine come upon you and upon your land? So that was one option. Or will you flee 3 months before your enemies while they pursue you? That was the second option. Or shall there be 3 days plague in your land? That was the third option. And advise, and see what answer I shall return to him who sent me. So those were the choices that were laid out before David. He had to choose one of them and let Gad know. So here David was presented with three choices, all of which would affect the nation of Israel. The first option was to endure 7 years of famine in the nation. The second choice was to be chased by Israel's enemies for 3 months. And the third option was to have a plague go through the land that would last 3 days. Now, if you were presented with each one of these options, you would probably want to think about each one. Think about the ramifications of each. You'd probably want to weigh the pros and cons and consider very deeply how each of these options would affect others. Which one would you choose? Now, it is interesting to note that there is a seeming discrepancy in the number of years of famine. In 1 Chronicles 21, verse 12, states one of the options was 3 years of famine. And we just read in 2 Samuel there would be 7 years of famine. Why the difference? Well, it's quite possible that the nation was already going through a famine for 4 years. So adding the 3 years would come to a total of seven. The 3 years which were stated in 1 Chronicles. So 3 plus 4 equals 7. So David was understandably stressed by this decision that he had to make. And verse 14. And David said to Gad, I am in great distress. Let us fall now into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great. And do not let me fall into the hands of man. David realized that God's mercy was greater than man's. And ultimately, David chose the famine option. He also did not choose to be chased by his enemies, so that left the plague. He did not choose the famine option. So that was the first one. He did not choose the first option. He also did not choose to be chased by his and Israel's enemies, so that was the second option. So that left the third option, the plague. And the Lord sent a plague upon Israel from the morning even till the time appointed. And there died from the people, from Dan to Beersheba, 70,000 men. So David chose to have the plague come through the nation. But he also had the faith to realize that God would not make it too severe. He probably hoped that God would show mercy and cut short the plague. And that seems to be what happened, even though 70,000 men died. Verse 16, and when the angel stretched out his hand upon Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord turned from the evil and said to the angel who destroyed the people, enough, and stay your hand. And the angel of the Lord was by the threshing place of Araunah, also known as Ornan, the Jebusite. So God spared Israel from more deaths from the plague. And David pleaded with God for mercy. And God answered. Then David also asked an interesting question in verse 17. And David spoke to the Lord when he saw the angel who struck the people and said, Lo, I have sinned and I have done wickedly. But these sheep, what have they done? I pray you, let your hand be against me and against my father's house. So David understood why God was punishing him for his sins. But do you wonder why God would punish the entire nation? It seemed that he hadn't realized yet the issues of pride that were showing. And at the same time, David wanted to choose a punishment that would affect him personally as well. As king of Israel, it would be unlikely that he would have suffered starvation through famine. He knew his enemies would kill him if given any opportunity to do so. So David chose the plague, and it's very possible that he contracted it himself and became ill. As a side note, David wrote about sickness in several of the Psalms. His writings were very eloquent. Some of the examples can be found in Psalm 6. Psalm 38 and 39 and 41. And perhaps he was writing those from personal experience. It is also possible he was writing figuratively about sin. But there could be an element of first-hand experience as well with those issues. It's not out of the realm of possibility that David contracted the plague himself and he wrote those psalms as prayers of deliverance. Not only from the disease, but also from the consequences, as well as from the sin that brought this whole incident about. Let's take a look at one of those psalms. Let's keep our places here and turn over to Psalm 38, because it conveys some of the pain that David went through. Psalm chapter 38. Psalm 38. think about these words as we read them. Psalm 38. Title in the New King James Bible is A Prayer in Time of Chastening. Psalm 38, verse 1. A psalm of David to bring to remembrance. O Lord, do not rebuke me from your wrath, or in your wrath, neither chasten me in your fury. For your arrows stick fast in me, and your hand presses heavily on me. There is no soundness in my flesh because of your anger, nor rest in my bones because of my sin. For my iniquities have gone over my head like a heavy burden. They are too heavy for me. My wounds have putrefied and rotted because of my foolishness. I am troubled. I am bowed down greatly. I go mourning all the day long. For my loins are filled with a burning. There is no soundness in my flesh. I am feeble and painfully broken. I have roared because of the groanings of my heart. My Lord, all my desire is before you, and my sighing is not hidden from you. My heart pants, my strength fails me. As for the light of my eyes, it is all gone from me. My lovers and my friends stand apart from the plague, and my neighbors stand afar off. And those who seek my life, lay snares for me. And those who seek my heart speak sly things and utter deceits all the day long. But like a deaf one, I do not hear. And I am like a dumb one who opens not his mouth. And I am as a man who hears not, and in whose mouth are no reproofs. For in you, O Lord, I hope. You will hear, O Lord my God. For I said, hear me, lest they rejoice over me. When my foot slips, they magnify themselves against me. For I am ready to fail, and my pain is always before me. For I will declare my iniquity. I am anxious for my sin. And my enemies are lively, they are strong. And my haters increase by deception. And those who give evil for good oppose me because I follow good. Forsake me not, O Lord, O my God, be not far from me. Make haste to help me, O Lord, my salvation. It's a very moving psalm. And it shows some of the pain and suffering that David endured. Back in 2 Samuel, God, through the prophet Gad, then instructed David to build an altar on the threshing floor of Araunah, or Ornan, the Jebusite. Remember, this was the place where God stopped the plague from going any further. It was located at the top of Mount Moriah, as 2 Chronicles 3, verse 1 states. So then David went to see Araunah, as God commanded. When Araunah saw David's and his servants approaching, he went out to meet them. Verse 21 explains the purpose of the mission. Chapter 24, 2 Samuel. And Araunah said, why has my lord the king come to his servant? And David said, to buy the threshing floor from you, to build an altar to the Lord, so that the plague may be stayed from the people. And David's purpose was to buy the property for Araunah in order to build an altar to God. Verse 22. And Araunah said to David, let my lord the king take and offer up what seems good to him. Behold, oxen for burnt sacrifice, and threshing instruments, and instruments for the oxen for wood. And all these things Araunah, like a king, gave to the king. And Araunah said to the king, may the Lord your God accept you. So Araunah offered as a gesture of kindness to give David everything he needed for the altar. Notice verse 24, because it brings out something interesting. And the king said to Araunah, no, but I will surely buy from you at a price. And I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God of that which costs me nothing. And David bought the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. So David kindly refused Arauna's offer. Instead, he offered to pay for the threshing floor and the items needed for the sacrifice. David would not offer to God something that he did not pay for. And there's a lesson here too. Principle is that when we give something, when we give an offering to God, whether it be in service to God or money, it requires a certain sacrifice from us. Otherwise, it's not really sacrificial offerings. And David realized that. It has to be personal. But it also doesn't mean we sacrifice everything we have. David felt an obligation to purchase the location of the altar and the needed supplies. So that way it would come out of his own pocket, as it were. In verse 25, and David built there an altar to the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. And the Lord was entreated for the land, and the plague was stayed from Israel. And with that, the story ends, and the book of Samuel, 2 Samuel, concludes. So what lessons can we learn from David's example, David's counting of Israel, and the sin involved in this? What can we learn from this example? We already saw some of the lessons. One is that God allows things to happen in our lives. He allows Satan to interfere. We saw that in the first part of the two accounts in 2 Samuel 24 and 1 Chronicles 21. We have to be able to recognize when Satan is trying to get into our lives. It appears David was blinded to that fact, that it was wrong to count Israel. Bear in mind that in times past, God did command the number of Israel. But in this situation, however, was different. And the difference was this, that God did not command David to take a census. And that really is a big difference. David took it upon himself to do so. We have to have the ability to realize when Satan is trying to influence us. At the same time, we cannot blame Satan exclusively for all the problems that we face, for everything goes wrong in our lives. I ran across so many red lights, that's got to be Satan. You know, that's going over the line a little bit. We have to realize that Satan is not responsible for everything that goes wrong in our lives. God must be first and foremost in our lives. We can do that to minimize Satan's influence. We have to own up to our sins, as David did once he realized that he had sinned. We also have to realize that if there is something else between us and God, or something between us and God, that Satan will exploit that. If there is a wedge between us and God, then Satan will drive that wedge further to the point that we become separated from God. We must not allow that to happen. In order to be close to God and to stay close to God, we must have constant contact with God. And we do that through regular, consistent prayer, study, fasting, meditation. If we do these things, then there is no room. We leave no room for Satan to get between us and God. And one area that can separate us from God is pride. David and the nation of Israel were evidence of that. That could very well be the reason that God was angry with David and with Israel. They were showing an attitude of pride with all the victories over their enemies. They neglected to give the honor and the glory to God for those victories. They thought that they had done it on their own. And that too is a lesson for us. We must always give God credit for the victories in our lives. was never take credit for ourselves, because that can lead to an attitude of pride, and that can lead to an attitude of self-reliance, where we get to the point where we think we don't need God anymore. Hopefully we never come to that point. And we can get to that point where we don't think that we need God anymore. And that's one of the wedges that Satan will use to get us separated from God. The opposite of pride, of course, is humility. It's an attitude that God looks for in us. It's an attitude that we have to display every day. It's not always easy. But then, nobody ever said that being a Christian would be easy. A true Christian. We are noticed, whether we like it or not. We're noticed by our family, by our friends, by our co-workers. We're noticed everywhere we go. One example, or our example rather, says a lot about who we are. Do we brag about the great things that we've done? Or do we just go about our business quietly without drawing undue attention to ourselves? Now David, as the king, was by necessity very visible to others. It was part of the position of rulership. And his example was noticed. And in hindsight, David should have exercised more humility at times. But God was angry with David and with Israel because they were not humble. And there was a price to pay for being proud. One of the ways that pride manifested itself in David was how he ignored the advice from Joab. David was blinded to the truth. We might remember that Joab was one of David's most trusted advisors. David should have listened to Joab, and Joab told David not to take the census. Joab realized it was wrong to do so. He knew that it really wasn't important, since God could multiply the nation ad infinitum if needed, and if he wanted to. Rather than listening to Joab, David ignored his advice and seemingly the advice of the army commanders as well. And there's a lesson for us too. We should listen to others when they're talking sensibly. At the same time, we need to have the discernment to know when someone is trying to lead us away from God. Joab was talking sense. But unfortunately for David and for Israel, his words were ignored. And the consequences were far-reaching. When we sin, and we will sin, we're not perfect, but when we sin, we must repent. We must realize that we sinned, and then change our ways so that we hopefully don't make the same mistake again. But we realize that doesn't always happen. We stumble from time to time. We're human. It's not an excuse. We must keep on trying. And that's the important thing, is to keep trying, to never give up. But nevertheless, when we sin, there are consequences. When David sinned by counting Israel, there were consequences. 70,000 men died because of David's actions, David's sin. Imagine if you were responsible for 70,000 people dying. How would you feel? David wrote many beautiful psalms. A number of them from personal experience. We read one of them earlier. Perhaps one of the consequences he suffered was that he himself had contracted the plague that God had put on Israel. That made it personal for David. When David was told to build an altar, he did so. And even though he was offered the location and the items for the altar and the sacrifice at no cost, he thought it best to actually purchase them. And there's a lesson for us too. If we give our offerings of service or money to God, and it doesn't really cost anything, and it's not really sacrifice on our part, we're not really giving up anything when we do that. Instead, we need to be reminded of the ultimate sacrifice, that of Jesus Christ. And even though we can't sacrifice enough, it should still cost us something. So today we looked at the account of David taking a census of Israel. We saw why it was wrong. We looked at some of the underlying reasons for this episode, this incident. We looked at some of the lessons that even we can learn today. We saw why God was angry with David and with Israel in the first place. It seems that they were filled with pride. And because of that, they did not recognize it was God who gave them the victories. We saw how Satan influenced David, which God allowed. David was blinded to the fact that it was wrong to count Israel. And we can minimize Satan's impact in our lives through regular, consistent prayer, study, fasting, and meditation. We saw that Joab attempted to talk David out of taking the census. Joab realized it was wrong. Unfortunately, Joab's words fell on deaf ears with David, and David ignored Joab's advice not to go ahead with the count. Lesson for us is that we should all listen to others when they're making sense, just as Joab was making sense to David. We saw that there was certainly enough time for David to reconsider his decision, since the census took nearly 10 months to complete. It's a long time to think about things. He had a long time to think about what he was doing. And in the process, we also hopefully cleared up some of the seeming discrepancies between these two accounts in 2 Samuel 24 and 1 Chronicles related to the numbers. We saw that David finally did realize his mistake, although, in a sense, it was too late. There was a price to be paid. There were consequences. David realized that he had sinned. He asked God for forgiveness, which was granted. And likewise, we too must own up to our sins. We saw the options that David was presented with as punishment for his and the nation's sins. His choice of punishment was a plague that killed 70,000 people, 70,000 men. And David himself might very well have been infected with the plague as well. Some of his writings in the book of Psalms seem to indicate that. We looked at the altar that David built. Although he was offered the items for the altar at no cost, David chose to pay Araunah for them. A lesson for us is that a sacrifice is just that, a sacrifice. If we don't give up anything, or if we don't have to give up anything, it's not really a sacrifice. So it has to be personal. As a nation, Canada and the United States will periodically conduct a census. And one of the census, or the purposes of the census, is to determine the number of inhabitants in the land. David's taking a census of Israel was a very powerful example. There are many lessons that we can learn. We can just look at a few of them. Let's take these lessons to heart, and hopefully we can avoid some of the trauma and the heartache that David had to go through. Let's, at the same time, let's also realize that numbers do play an important part of our lives, but let's also learn from David's example.